At the top of the hour, we have Reverend Leonard Yearwood coming up, and he is the CEO and president of Hip Hop Caucus, the Hip Hop Caucus. We're going to be talking to him about that. He's very, very much involved with the hip hop music. He worked with people such as Sean Diddy Combs. What kind of name is that? Sean P. Diddy Combs, whatever. Jay-Z. So we're going to be talking to him about the quote-unquote attack on hip-hop music at the top of the hour. So don't touch that dial. Reverend Yearwood, thank you so much for coming on with us. I appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
You just got out of jail, I hear. Why were you in jail?
Yeah, I was in jail. We were actually protesting the supplemental bill that was getting put forth yesterday in the Senate. Just really just against that process, and just one thing led to another, and we were arrested.
Tell the folks what is the did you say sentimental bill?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
The Congress is on the House had voted to put forth another $124 billion to this to see more war, and the Senate was voting on the same. And so we just, many of us, particularly in the hip-hop community, but in the peace community, just recognized that we must make our voices heard now. And so we went down to the Senate building, and we're just saying that, you know, more money for this war means that there'd be more Iraqis who will be killed, more U.S. soldiers who will be killed, and it will just have devastating effects on both this country and the Iraqi government. So we were just there protesting, just letting them know that this madness must stop, and our priorities must become on a different path, because you cannot have close to 500,000 currently displaced Katrina survivors. You can't have 1.7 internally displaced Iraqis, 2 million Iraqi refugees, and continue on the path that we're on. And so we were just out there yesterday speaking truth to power, saying that this must stop.
I want to talk a little bit about you, and then we want to get into the hip-hop issue that is happening right now. You are a reverend, and you work with people like Russell Simmons,
yep,
Jay-Z's,
yep,
P. Diddy?
Yep.
Let me ask first, you are a reverend. Were you called by God?
Yes. I was definitely called.
And how do you know you were called? What was the evidence of the calling?
The evidence of the calling? Well, I would say this. I've been in the ministry now for about 10 years. The calling was very, very distinct. I was actually doing a homeless ministry at the time. And this was actually when I was in undergrad. And at that point in time, it was very distinct that in your own power that this could not work. And then the calling was very clear. And obviously, they're very, as you can imagine, people have a variety of different call stories throughout history.
Yeah.
Some strange and some obviously following the same pattern.
How old were you when you were called?
My calling took place when I was, when was that now? So that would have been, I was about 25.
25. You know, yeah. Let me do something. I'm sorry about this. I need my engineer to close the door to the studio. I hear them talking. He walked out of the studio again for some reason. And he left the studio door open. I hear this conversation. I'm being distracted. I don't know what's going on, my engineer. He won't stay with me today. Can you close that door all the way there, sir, Billy?
Okay.
That door there.
Okay.
Close it now. I can hear everybody talking out there. Okay. I'm sorry about that, Reverend.
No problem.
I'm sorry. And you say you were about 29 when you were called?
Nah, about 25.
25, okay. And so you didn't have to go to school to become a preacher, a minister, a reverend?
Not necessarily. I mean, in the beginning, I didn't. I went to school. I got my Master's Divinity from Howard University.
Yes.
And then I actually went back and I got all but my dissertation, my Master's of Theology. from Washington Theological Union, which is a part of the Catholic university system. And then I'm pretty well-versed in all the good biblical languages like Hebrew and Greek and all that stuff. So.
Okay, what changed about you? You went from what to what once you became a minister? Once God called you, you accepted the call. How did you change?
As far as my calling, I didn't really change as far as the calling, as far as moving from that position of servanthood to being in the ministerial position. It really wasn't, and that was, I think, because I was younger. There were a number of, at the church at that time I was attending, there were obviously a number of ministers and assistant pastors. And so for me, I was pretty much, right into the youth ministry, obviously, because I was young. And right. And then I was already pretty much involved in the community. I mean, from a family.
What I mean is that your nature, once God called you, he had to change your nature. So your nature didn't go from evil to good.
I was already a Christian.
Okay.
I had been a Christian for a while before that. So it wasn't like it was changing my philosophy of life and my belief system. I think the calling just made me more determined. It gave me much more responsibility and much more accountability to being a servant to the people and a servant of man. And so it was pretty much where the calling. I was already a Christian, so
okay.
The calling, the calling pretty much didn't change from the good. Even that was when I gave my life to Christ. Then that definitely took place.
Okay.
You're
the president of Hip Hop Caucus. What is Hip Hop Caucus?
The Hip Hop Caucus is a public policy and civil rights organization. It was established in 2004, right at the end of the 2004 electoral process. And it was established because really, there wasn't an inside-outside approach to policy and making federal policy change. And at that point in time, I was the political director and graduate director with the Hip Hop Summit Action Network with Russell Simmons. And then where we registered a lot of young people to get out to vote, and then just didn't recognize that there wasn't a vehicle inside of Washington. And so really needing that vehicle, so things like what we see would be Katrina and recognizing dealing with policy, things like this war, and just in education. A lot of young people don't have an understanding of the political process and civics anymore. So this is really bringing that to them as well, just like making sure they can be involved in the process.
Do you tend to lean more toward the Democrat Party or Republican?
You know, I would say this. By the nature, I'm an African American, and most African Americans are Democrat. But I would say now, in that, I'm definitely much more progressive, and I'm definitely much more issue based. So I would say that we are definitely beyond partisan, even beyond nonpartisan. I think that we are postpartisan. I think that we're looking for a system that will really deal with the issues. It's really failing, particularly poor people. In urban communities, the system really fails them.
And so when you say progressive, you mean you're more liberal?
I would say progressive. Liberal has a tag to it. I would definitely say progressive from the standpoint that I definitely believe that the power of government should be within the people's hands. I'm definitely much more progressive in thinking that there's no difference between rich or poor. I don't think there should be a difference. I think that if you give, you shouldn't be given more rights because you're rich or you're poor. I think that's what makes this country beautiful, is that it doesn't break that down on paper for black or white or rich or poor. So I definitely think that for me, it's much more progressive to be in a position by the terminology of the term that really equals out all of the, doesn't really put one group ahead of another group doesn't base it upon, well, this group worked hard and that one didn't work hard.
So when you found the hip hop caucus and it's for public policy and civil rights issue, you didn't feel that the Congressional Black Caucus or the so-called black leadership, they were not doing a good job, enough job in that area or something?
Well, no. I will say this. I mean, I definitely feel that a lot of the institutions that were there under that guise had become institutionalized. And I think that we were in a position as young people to really be able to connect in a different way. I mean, obviously, we had young people who were obviously working on more of the bottom level and across the country. And so they had much more accessibility to me and or to the organization. I think a lot of times now, obviously, you have organizations that have been around for quite some time, which is not bad. I mean, you definitely need to have continuity. But I think that the thing there is that you have a situation where a lot of times when you become institutionalized, you just kind of get into the business of being in business. Now, that's not the case for the caucus. We're pretty new, so we're not there yet. We hope we can survive another 3 years, but it's more important for us to serve the people.
Right.
And I think that's it. So I wouldn't say that, you know, to critique so much isn't about if they're not doing or they are doing. I think that we just have so much more flexibility to do more, particularly with our demographic and our age group.
1-888-77-JESSE. 1-888-53773. And the Jesse is no I, J-E-S-S-E. My guest is Reverend Lennox Yearwood. He is the CEO and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. And the lines are wide open. You'd like to speak with the Reverend. Now it's the time to jump in. Are we going on break, Bill? Okay, we're going to take a break and be back in a moment. Okay, welcome back. Jesse Lee Peterson is here, 888-77-JESSE, no I, J-E-S-S-E. Reverend Lennox Yearwood is my guest. He is the CEO and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. Reverend, I want to ask about the New Orleans Hurricane Katrina situation. Are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
I noticed that during that situation, a lot of the black men, not all, but most, sat around along with the women and waited for the government to come in and save them. They had time to get out of the city. They could have really had enough time to walk out. There were buses sitting around, and the black mayor didn't go and help. He didn't do anything for the folks. Instead, he blamed President Bush for it. The white governor didn't do anything. But because the city was morally, especially the inner city, morally bankrupt, in that the men were, you know, screwing everybody and their mama, making babies by everybody and their mama, instead of working and taking care of their folks, they depended on the government. Do you agree with that? And what are you doing to change that? Because I know you guys are involved in the New Orleans situation.
Yeah, I would say this. I think that the one thing that New Orleans definitely revealed is that we obviously have a class apartheid system in America, that there was obviously huge amounts of poverty. And I think that was definitely revealed within that storm.
But is it poverty because the average black man won't, you know, work and take care of his family, or is it due to racism? What is causing that?
Well, I mean, poverty obviously is caused for lack of work, and I don't think that you know, obviously we know now that there's living wage bill that was passed successfully recently by the Congress, and now we're hoping that there will be a job bill program passed.
But what's wrong with the black men that they can't create their own jobs? Before the civil rights movement, and when the laws were really against black Americans, the black men would get out there and create their own jobs. There were black universities around the country, black businesses.
Yeah, well,
what is wrong with them that they are so dependent on the government instead of themselves?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for me. I'm from Louisiana, and I'm a black male, and I have a bachelor's and a master's, and I've created several institutions. So I think that, again, blanket statements like that would put me in it. If you said a black male from Louisiana.
Well, not all, but most black men today.
Well, even most. I mean, that again.
But look what happened in New Orleans, though. New Orleans is a good example. is that I do a lot of work in New Orleans, and I noticed that the black folks there were suffering not because they didn't have material things, but they lack character. And when they put the folks into the dome, within a three-day period, they turned the dome into a ghetto. And that's because of the lack of character. Do you guys deal with the lack of character in the black community?
Well, I would say this. Again, for me being an African-American from Louisiana, I don't think I lack character. And I would just say that blanket statements like that are very dangerous. I think that would be the same thing, for instance, like it would say that to say that men who have Asian descent are nonviolent. Obviously, that might not be the statement we would make now. And even to make that statement would be a blanket statement, because one person, that's just an egregious act like what happened in Virginia Tech, it wouldn't be fair. And I think that what we need to really deal with, not the symptoms, but the root causes. And I think that to just make those kind of statements is very, very unfortunate even. I think we need to get to the root causes and say, what can we do to fix? As a minister, I'm always looking at not to sit here and blame the poor.
What are the root causes of the destruction?
Why do we have poverty? Or why, if there are more lapses in the community, why is that? If there are situations where people are doing drug addiction, why is that? You know what I mean? So I don't want to sit. So I want to get to the root causes and then really fix those.
Right. That's where I have you here, too. I want to ask, because I do want to talk about the rap music, but I want to ask, what is the root cause of, according to the Census Bureau, of 70% of black babies born out of wedlock, black on black crime? Now they have this thing about no, don't snitch. Of all the new HIV cases, over 50% are found within the black community today. What is the root cause of the lack of moral character in the black community?
Yeah, I would take a different approach. I'm not going to disagree with the numbers because I don't have the statistics. For those in front of me, as you know, statistics can be manipulated. But let's just take them at face value. Say what you just said. I would just say this. To look at that statistic and not look at all the effects upon that community, to not look at, for instance, how does a Barack Obama, who obviously is an American, how does he then rise to his position? How does a Reverend Yearwood get to having a point where how does an Oprah, or how does certain things? And I would say, in spite of a system that is not a user-friendly system, particularly for poor people, white, black, Asian, whatever, and in particular for people of color, it's a system that is not the most user-friendly system.
What do you mean by user-friendly? What do you mean by that?
I mean that the system by nature doesn't mean it. Obviously, right now, we're fighting for more books to be put into and more schools that have better teachers and better from grade school on up through, obviously, high school. We're looking for the same schools that are in certain neighborhoods and suburbs to be as good as in the inner city. And we're looking for certain avenues the caucus wants to provide as much transparency to government so that people can understand the system.
I want to go quickly back to the question of what is the root cause of black, not all black by a long shot, but both black people being out of control morally.
And I would
what
say
what
most,
is the root?
Maybe it's from where I'm from. I deal with the hip-hop community. I deal with the conscious side, obviously, as you know, most of the side. I deal with the side that doesn't do it to say B or the N-word or the or H-word. I deal with the side that's usually dealing with a side that's really putting forth a political, like, comment and other artists like that on that side. And I deal with that side. So I understand the corporate side of hip-hop, which definitely puts forth a very negative image. And it's interesting that the corporate side of hip-hop is not usually run by African-Americans. And so you do get a lot of blackface and buffoonery.
That's a good point. What made, because you never did tell me what is the root cause of the lack of character within the black community.
I would say economics. I mean, I would say
economic?
I would say there are many root causes, obviously.
So are you saying that economics causes black men and women to have babies by everybody and their mama?
Well, I don't think it's everybody. I don't have babies by everybody. I know a lot of my, again, I went to Howard University, which is, and I have a lot of friends.
Well, I know, but you're right. You've done very.
I'm not the exception either. I don't think that we're the exception. I'm in churches all across this country where I have people who are understand very harsh. And when I say economics, what I mean is like wealth distribution. When you're growing up in a society, I also didn't grow up rich. I didn't grow up with, you know, my parents didn't come from a position. My parents actually were immigrants. My parents both came from Trinidad, a little small island in the Caribbean. And they came here and they worked hard. And then, you know, and they got me and they overcame a lot.
I know, but tell us what is the root cause, according to the Census Bureau. I'm not making up these numbers. They could be shut down.
Economics. I believe.
But how is, you know, prior to the Civil Rights Movement, I grew up on a plantation in Alabama mm-hmm. where the laws were against black Americans. And you didn't see this type of, you know, out of wedlock birth and abortion, you know, over 15 million black babies have been aborted inside the black woman's womb. Every day, 1,500 or so are aborted. There's no respect for the most part for elderly.
21st century, I think that we should become a much more, a wonderful society where you have black and white.
So are you saying that racism, that white folks are making black people be so destructive?
Nah, not at all. I think that it's economics. I think it's a.
But how though? You are a smart guy. That's apparent. But you're not quite telling me how is the lack of money causing folks to have sex with everybody and kill one another?
Yeah, I think that we live in a society that obviously is based upon capitalism and just on capital.
Is that a bad idea?
On capitalism?
Yes.
I think capitalism out of control could be bad. I think capitalism can have some good processes to it. I think it makes, but I think that as we see now, corporations out of control, corporations paying CEOs, you know, crazy amounts of money. I think that, and then, you know, sustaining that. I think that we have a number of good companies like Ben and Jerry's, you know, the list is quite long of companies who actually use capitalism to benefit the communities and benefit their workers and are good. You know, I think Google actually was one of the top of the list in that area, an area that helps their communities and their employees and the whole. But I think the out of control, anything out of control racism, out of control capitalism, anything like that can be very problematic.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. So I was just saying that obviously living in that society, obviously with capitalism is the means and the way that I think that when you're dealing, you must deal with economics. And I think you also must deal with wealth distribution. And you must deal with a community that really, as you said, I'm speaking to you, and you were on a plantation.
Yes.
And so obviously you have a community that literally was isolated and out of the economic structure. They were literally on plantations. They were literally, you know, segregated away from the main.
But you know what they did, though? They worked hard. There was a respect for one another and for what was right. And so a lot of the black kids from that plantation would go off to black schools around the country, colleges around the country, and they came back as professionals, you know, to help the community. They didn't go to the government or they didn't blame the white man. They came back as an example that in spite of the laws being against black folks at the time, that we were able to overcome anyway. But I don't feel and see that happening for the most part. Let me take a quick break.
And I do, though. And it's funny because, I mean, always,
let me take, Reverend, hold on. Let me take, and I'll let you respond to that, okay?
Sure.
888-775-3773. Jesse is here, back in a moment. Okay, welcome back. Reverend Leonard Yearwood is my guest today. He's the CEO and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. Reverend, respond to my last statement, and then I want you to tell me what is going to change with the rap music as a result of the IMUS, Don IMUS situation?
Well, I'll just say this in response to your last statement. As far as, again, I think that it's very important not to just put out blanket statements. I do agree with you that the mentality of not reaching to be all you can be,
yeah,
if you're black or white, needs to change. I think particularly people of color,
yes,
have something to pull on because of, from Frederick Douglass to Sojourner Truth to Fannie Lou Hamer, have a history and a legacy of pulling themselves up. And I agree with you that we should not, there should not be a, you should not pull your, put yourself in a position where you are, have a slave mentality anymore.
I would agree
with that. There's no doubting in that. There's not, there's no letting that happen. You almost, more so than any other color. Not saying that, I also think we should be, we should try it as hard as we can to get rid of racism and judging ourselves based upon our hue and our color. I think we should begin to move as a society that gets rid of that. But in the meantime, because of the struggles, I agree. I think that as far as the rap,
Reverend, I need you to speak into your phone. You turn away from the phone.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
As far as the rap music is concerned, I think, you know, obviously we said earlier that there is a corporate side. I was happy to see Russell coming out against the language in hip-hop. I think it was, you know, was I was very excited to see that move within the corporate side of hip-hop.
Do you think that Russell was or is a hypocrite because he's made buku money off, you know, dirty rap music, and now he's coming out against it?
No, I'm not saying he's a hypocrite. I'm just saying that I think that he recognizes, obviously, that it's time for a change. I mean, it is, it definitely is time for a change.
Right.
And I think that we all are recognizing, I mean, that it is a situation that, it you know, we need to begin to move beyond that. Rap music in particular, music in general, particularly for communities of color, should be in the legacy of freedom music. Down by the Riverside was a gospel, but it was also
that's a great song.
It was a roadmap to freedom. And so, you know, it was you were escaping from that plantation. So I think that these songs that people are singing now should be those same, it should be roadmaps. There should be roadmaps to economic success,
yeah.
Roadmaps to political understanding, roadmaps to understand about yourself and your body, of eating right. I mean, you could you can sing and make anything hot. I mean, you have that gift, and I think that the artists should definitely use that gift to put forth. And obviously, they have, you now have Christian hip-hop artists, and a lot of that from holy hip-hop are using that to connect to generations of people.
Have you always felt this way?
I've always felt, as far as using...
That the music need to be more encouraging rather than exploitation.
Always. Well, that's nature. I mean, that's the nature of the work that I mean, always my work with Hip Hop Caucus is always about trying to uplift people and getting them more to be all they can be. So, no, definitely. I've always felt this way. I've also understood, though, the context. It's the thing. I mean, I know a young lady who has a book, and her book is From Poho to Rich B. And I understand where that comes from. So, and I'm not going to disparage, I'm not going to look at her as a charity case. I'm looking at her not as charity, but as solidarity, as saying, look, you know, there's a better way. Obviously, you have a gift. You want to write. Writing is not easy. I don't think writing's that easy.
Yeah.
But use your writing in a different manner, or use it in a way. And if you're going to tell a story that might need to be told, tell it in a way in which people are clear that you are communicating, so they're not turned off by the initial process.
That's right. Who is to blame for the rap crap over the last 10 years or so?
I would say it's corporate, and I would say it just became very lucrative, and it became, I mean, we know now in the 70s, there was particularly black exploitation, Dolemite, you know, Superfly, you know, we've always had systems that, situations where, unfortunately, you know, it could be profitable sometimes to exploit other communities.
You know? So are you saying, when you say corporate American, are you saying that people like Russell Simmons and others who have made money off the rappers, they are to blame?
Oh, across the board. I mean, anybody who knowingly put themselves in a position, if you don't know, but when you know you are exploiting a community, black, white, green, or yellow, it doesn't matter. When you know you are exploiting a community and using that and using things as buffoonery and blackface, nobody's excluded from that.
What is wrong, Reverend Yearwood, with the rappers that they would allow themselves to be exploited, and are they to blame for this as well?
Nah, it boils down to, unfortunately, money. I mean, we do many strange things. I mean, unfortunately, I've seen as many strange things in the rap community as I've seen in the church community. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the prosperity type mentality. I think it all kind of falls under the same thing with 50 Cent. I'm not a big fan of the get rich or die trying. And I think, unfortunately, that is the mentality. And so, I mean, that's what's wrong. And I think when you have that get rich or die trying mentality, you know, unfortunately, too many people are not getting rich and too many people are dying trying. And so I think that's what happens.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what you have, what you see a lot of within the rap community and within our culture in general. People are literally, you know, doing all they can for the almighty dollar.
Do you agree with me that unlike 50 years ago, black people are not mentally strong as they were then? They seem to be weak and you know, they seem to fall for anything, especially if it's coming from other black so-called leadership. Do you agree with me on that? That they're not mentally and spiritually, emotionally strong?
Well, let me take it from a different angle. I would say this. I will agree with you on this. We do have, unfortunately now, a lot of superficial leadership within the black community.
Would that be people like Sharpton and Jackson and the NAACP and others?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not close enough to them. I don't really know.
But you know enough about them to know if they are real or superficial, don't you?
Yeah, but the thing about it, the reason I say I don't know enough about them, and it would be because a lot of people might look at me and be like, that's Reverend Hip Hop, and make a statement. And when they talk to me, they have a very, very different opinion of that. And so for me being in that position, somebody who's a reverend and not understanding the position I take to really bring up young people of all colors, particularly in the political process, they think it's music and it has nothing to do with music, actually.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of, because I know I get that. And they're like, oh, this is about politics. And it's about
right. that well, when all. You say superficial leadership, who are you referring to?
Well, when I say superficial leadership, what I'm talking about is I'm talking about leadership in general, and what you used to have, talking about Katrina in essence, leadership who would recognize the problem with Katrina and would do everything they can to make sure that injustice is visible. And that's what I mean when I say superficial leadership. You now have leadership who is not trying to make the injustice visible, but trying to make the injustice fundable.
Why not start a campaign that will encourage black Americans to turn away from leadership and take control of their own lives? You know, the fathers get married.
Well, the caucus is doing that. I mean, the caucus is creating that paradigm shift.
Right.
I mean, we're looking to really empower the more you know about the system, obviously, the more you know about what you're dealing with, you usually fall for any type of leadership because you're in a position where you don't know the system or the process. And so when you know the system or the process, hence the reason why I say we are post-partisan. It's not about Democrat or Republican. Obviously, I was, you know, from that standpoint, I think it becomes issue-based. When you understand the issue, when you understand how policy is done, how it is changed, and then you become much more. Then you understand the collective nature of organizing within community. So then you begin to do that. Once that happens, you are now empowered so that superficial leadership just can't come up there and be like, this is the problem, we need to do it. And then you have a much more accountable and measurable system of leadership. And I think that's what I'm talking about when I talk about trying to ward away from the superficial. You have to understand that a lot of our institutions, again, have become institutionalized. So from the church to the corporations, a lot of things that was there in the community that would allow someone to really inspect their leadership. Now you don't have that. Now you have, you know, you have a lot of TV preachers who can just show up and leave. So you don't really have you can't really see if what they're doing.
Yeah.
As the old folks said, you can't press flesh. You can't really see that. And so I think that's unfortunate.
I think a good example of that is this guy, T.D. Jakes out of Texas. Are you familiar with him?
I am familiar with T.D. Jakes.
You are?
Yes.
he is one of those get wealth hypocrites. Yeah, hypocritical preachers that take advantage of the folks.
Well, again, I mean, obviously, you can tell my stance in this as a preacher. I try not to be too disparaging, but I will put out things that will definitely, if you are in that fold, it should bring you to hopefully it'll prick your spine, as they would say. And that you're right. I will agree with that. I mean, I would say not to these jakes, but in general, we have to get away from prosperity preaching back to people preaching.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to get ourselves from a prosperity-based faith back to a faith and, what you were saying, back to a faith and survival-based faith.
That's right.
And that leads us. And I think that that's one of the reasons we talk back to the root causes. And you're wondering, why is this happening? And again, if your churches, if your corporations, and if your rap community are all talking about get rich or die trying, then your children obviously will then respond as such.
I want to ask you about the Stop Snitching campaign. There's a campaign I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
It's encouraged by the rappers, some of the rappers,
yeah,
not to snitch. If you see murder or rape in your community, do not tell the police about it. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I'll say this. I think that it's ridiculous. I think that if you see something within your community, it's your community. You have to take care of your community. If you have somebody that is there killing your community, you need to get rid of that person. If somebody who is selling drugs in your community, you need to get rid of that person. It's ridiculous. Now, I do understand that the police are sometimes not looked upon as favorably. And sometimes, obviously, we see from what we saw from Sean Bell in New York and other instances, that police brutality, particularly around people of color, does escalate a certain amount of suspicion against the police department. And it is true. The prison industrial complex system and other things, it is definitely noted that these things sometimes are not allies to the communities of color. Regardless of that, you should still stand up in your community.
Let me take a quick break, Reverend. We'll come back for our final moments with you. I want you to tell the folks how to get involved with your organization. 888-77-JESSE. That's 1-888-77-533-53773. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Reverend Leonard Yearwood. Back in a moment. Okay, welcome back to the show. You know, I have to really give credit to Reverend Leonard Yearwood. He was scheduled for 30 minutes. He's been kind enough to stay with us this long. I really want to say thank you, because you're definitely helping us get out a lot of good information here. I am and have enjoyed talking to you today. Before you can give out your information, I'll let you run. I want to talk once again about this Stop Snitching campaign. I, Reverend, believe and see that this was brought on by the black leadership within the black communities across the country. I remember when Congresswoman Maxine Waters from South Central Los Angeles was marching in the street with gang members shouting, "No justice, no peace," during the Rodney King trial. In New York, Al Sharpton during the Tawana Brawley situation blamed the cops. We later found out that the cops were innocent because the girl lied. Jesse Jackson and others have been accusing cops of racial profiling. And I think that over the last 10 years have brainwashed a lot of black boys and girls to hate the cops and not trust them. And because the fathers are not in the home to tell the boys and girls that these so-called black leadership are hypocrites and they are setting you up to fail, there is this lack of trust and animosity there between blacks and police officers, to a point that many blacks would protect the criminal over the police officer. And I think the corrupt leadership brought that on. It didn't start with the rappers. It was brought on and influenced by the so-called leadership. Am I wrong in that?
Well, I would say you're taking a big stretch, a big leap. I would think that's what I would say, and I would say that you know, it seems to be you're linking some things together. I think the bottom line.
But that did happen, though, right?
Well, no, I mean, it happened in some of the situations, obviously, with the Rodney King. I mean, you're dealing with a society, as you would know, that you mentioned earlier. We're coming up from the plantations. We're really striving now to go from the, you know, from the curb to the Congress, from the streets to the suites. And I think that one of the things there is that I agree that we should be very careful about leadership that is not going to be long standing with the community. That
yeah.
We can come in there, make a few comments, and then leave. But I also believe in this process that obviously there are tremendous amounts of injustice, unfortunately, that we still must deal with. It is just the way it is in society. It is here in America, and we can get to it. I think as a country and as a people, we are speeding toward a place.
When you say injustice, are you saying that many blacks, if not most blacks, are racist toward whites today, and that's why they're suffering? That's the injustice?
No, I think that no. I think we're still dealing with classism and poverty. We're still dealing with injustice as far as wealth distribution. I mean, there's a lot of different things that we're dealing with. That I think that we're dealing with some structural and institutional problems that we can fix. I mean, for me, I mean, I was an Air Force officer, and I believe and I know that it was very difficult for me in a system because there are very few African-American officers. But I do know even when I was in there, you can see the system changing. You can see more officers coming in there. And it's not about – it's just about differences. Sometimes it's just an unknown of each other. And as you become more acquainted with the process, it can change. And so I think that before we begin to disparage any leadership, because leadership is not easy. That's why you hear me not disparage any leadership or putting or calling out any names in particular. I think the bottom line to it as far as the stop snitching process is that communities need to recognize that they need to take control of their communities, and they need to be there to protect, obviously, the women and the children, and don't need to protect those who are hurting your community and putting your community in fear.
Yeah. I'm not clear, Reverend, if you agree with me or not, is that the black community, inner city blacks, have a issue with the lack of morality. Morally, they are morally bankrupt.
I don't agree with that. From that again,
why not? Why don't you agree with that?
I have to look at myself. I'm not morally bankrupt.
I know, but you're just one person. I'm talking about why would you say that the inner city, the
friends,
urban?
I mean, one of my best friends is a medical examiner in New York City. He's a pathologist, and I have so many more.
I know, but you could be a medical examiner and yet be morally bankrupt. Look at Bill Clinton. He was the president of the United States of America. At the time, and still is morally bankrupt.
Well, I would agree. I would agree with you that obviously, the situation that Bill Clinton took, and not necessarily the situation with Monica Lewinsky, but obviously the situation that he took, obviously dealing with Rwanda, was very, very displeasing. And obviously the situation with Rwanda and letting that genocide take place was very bad. Same with George Bush, what's going on in Darfur. And that the situation with genocide. So I agree. I think that, but we need to put it on that scale. Morally bankrupt, please, we cannot put it on the scale with as far as I think it is wrong.
How would you define morally bankrupt? What is your definition of that? I think we have two different definitions. What is yours? And I'll tell you mine.
Well, that might have to be for the next show because I'm getting ready to go to one. I'm getting there. Corley. I would love to go into. I think that's a much longer discussion than our time is going to give us. But I would love to come back. You said that'd be a teaser.
Okay, we'll do that. My final question. I appreciate that too. Were you offended by Don Imus' comment when he called the basketball team black holes, nappy headed holes? And do you think he should have gone to Errol Sharpton or just to the women? And should he have gotten fired?
I think that he should have gone to the school. I think it's offensive, regardless it was. If Imus was black, white, or whatever, I think it was offensive. If it was whoever it was, I can't leave it to his employer to make that decision, but I think it would have been wonderful when he did go to the school for them to go forward and make that decision. And I think that for me, obviously I am more concerned about what is happening with the other four-letter word called Iraq than I am concerned with what happened with IMIS.
Do you think he should have gone to Jackson?
You know,
I mean, Shopton. I'm sorry, Shopton.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously was his handler's decision. I mean, obviously he made it this choice to make that to go.
That was a mistake, though. Would you agree?
No, I mean, it's up to him. I mean, obviously he's fired now, so obviously it didn't work out in the position I guess that he might want it. But I mean, that was his choice. I mean, I think that the bottom line to it was with IMIS, for, and this is me, I will tell you, I am, from an African-American community, I am really not concerned about how what you call me. I am more concerned about how you treat me. And I am not concerned if IMIS says that and whatever. I think he should be reprimanded, and that should be between him and his employers and University, another institution, Rutgers University. I think that should have been where it should have been. I think
other, I agree.
I think people should be, I will say this. I think our community must be more involved in the other issues. I'm not, I know the out of wedlock and all those issues you mentioned, but I definitely think for me, my perspective of poverty and what's going on in Darfur and what's going on in Iraq, what's going on as far as water in Africa, I think are some leading causes that should definitely, we should be as riled up. And I think there's something very wrong when we are much more riled up about IMIS than we are about a child who's not eating, who is in foster care in Arkansas. And I think there's something wrong about that.
How can people get in touch with the Hip Hop Caucus, and what can they do to help?
Definitely. Young people, particularly you here, we're dealing with politics, and we want to get more people involved across the country. Visit our website. That's the best way. Go to hiphopcaucus.org, and you can just click on there. You can use that to connect with me. And definitely, let's continue this dialogue, and let's make our country and our world a better place.
Well, you know, you've been a great guest today, and I know you haven't agreed with everything that I've said, but you definitely dealt with it like a man, and I appreciate that.
No, thank you, and I look forward to having our more conversation in the future.
Okay, we'll have you back, and I wish you well in what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, that was Reverend Lennox Yearwood. He's the CEO and president of the Hip Hop Caucus. And we definitely disagreed on a lot of issues, especially the moral issues. You know, it's interesting in that for some reason, the lack of morality is untouchable. It's not dealt with within the black community. And I just don't understand. And I hope to have the Reverend back. But how do you expect to solve the problems in the black community if you don't deal with the lack of moral character? Jesus Christ was concerned about that. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was concerned about that. Gandhi dealt with that in his country. You know, even Malcolm X, once he overcame his anger, he was concerned about the family and the lack of morality within the black community. You know, white folks gave us everything. If they gave black folks everything, and they have, to be honest with you, it's still not going to solve the real problems of the black community. Black folks got to turn back to good, back to God, away from the preachers, away from the so-called leaders. The men got to become the head of their wives and children. You know, it's a moral issue. It's not a physical issue. Black folks have a lot of money. You can go into the average ghetto today, and they'll drive in Cadillacs and big color TVs and DVDs and iPods and they have braids. It costs $50 or more to get a braid. Sometimes $100. So they have the money, the government take care of them, but it's a lack of character, and that seemed to be an issue that folks are afraid to mention. But if you can change the hearts and minds of people, turn them away from sin back to God, to good, then things would get better. But you know, stopping the war in Iraq is not going to do it. Attacking corporate America is not going to do it. It's men got to get involved. The men got to make the decisions. The men got to get married, and the husband and wife work together in raising the family, guiding the family. And we need to deal with the public school system out of control because the family is out of control. And when the family is broken, you can bring in garbage. into the school system. You can teach the boys and girls that homosexuality is fine, you know, take God out, because the home life is broken. And hopefully I can get to Reverend Bass. I really appreciate the guy staying. He was booked for 30 minutes. He ended up staying longer, almost an hour. And he just got out of jail this morning protesting the war in Iraq. They want to end the war. So I definitely appreciate him staying with us today. Go to our website at bondinfo.org, BONDINFO.org, and call us at 800-411-2663. 800-411-BOND for a copy of the newsletter to donate to the organization. We are rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man. We deal with all men. We got to restore God's order. And the politicians are not going to do it. It's we the people, not we the government. And so we can no longer depend on them. We have to go back to the good old days when fathers and mothers were together as husbands and wives and guiding their children in the right way to go.